was making trying to make derogatory memes about Hillary Clinton. And first he denied it, and then the denial was worse than the crime, and ended up with almost every single indie video game developer pulling support for the Oculus Rift.
Yeah, I mean,
that was last week.
I really don't like it when politics gets into gaming. I really want them to stay out of it, you know.
Well, I mean, there are games like Papers, Please, in which it's very political. But I know what you're talking about. Don't lie about it if you're gonna do that, you know.
This isn't just like a political thing, though. Like, this is a dude, a face of a company, actively being an internet troll,
and getting
caught on it.
You know, I was really
like, how dumb can you be?
I was uncomfortable when the PAX guys were trolling this one guy on Twitter. You know, it's like, you're the face of a company. Stop it. You know, no matter how justified you may think you are in doing it, it doesn't look right, and it makes other people who might deal with your company saying, he's doing this. What if he starts doing it to me? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Notes. There's been a lot of. Well, yesterday, of course, was a big launch, and today Microsoft is doing their big Gears of War 4 party. But I also saw a 10-minute gameplay video from a new game, and I'm pretty sure TJ is familiar with it, called Hello Neighbor, which is fairly creepy. Have you?
I haven't seen that one.
Okay, so it's about. It's sort of like Rear Window, in which you play this person who's trying to sneak into this guy's house. And that's the entire game. And he has a dark secret, whatever it is. And I'm going to tell you something. It's one of the creepiest things I've ever seen. And the funny part is that the guy, it's very cartoonish. And the guy looks like, you know, he looks like some random beer guy. It is really creepy. And it not just doesn't have it does have jump scares, but the thing is that one of the things that these developers are boasting is that it has extremely advanced AI, and not only can you use it against it, like throwing an apple against his window, so he goes to investigate what's going on with the apple, and then you sneak into his house, but it also learns everything that you're doing, so that it's not fooled by your tricks twice. So
interesting.
Check out this video, this trailer for Hello Neighbor, and someone called it a home invasion simulator, but it's sort of true, and it's really interesting because it's coming out a few months after another movie called Don't Breathe has been released, which hopefully the dark secret in Hello Neighbor isn't the same as Don't Breathe, for those who have seen the movie. Because that, I don't think you can come up with something creepier than that. Let's just say you'll never look at turkey basters the same way.
Oh my god.
Anyways, so we're gonna go, instead of saying what have you been playing, we'll get into that. But what games have you been learning about, or stuff independently that you've been finding out about? Let's start with Scott.
Well, I found out the Wasteland 3 backer thing has. It started, but see, I wanted to bring this up because you can back it, not just invest. Because when we talked about it the last time,
I gave
the impression you only wanted investors, but they actually will take backers, and they have a whole list of backings that you can do from $5 all the way up to $500 or whatever.
Scott, I didn't know that you thought that. You could only invest. I don't know if I mentioned
that impression that they only wanted to invest.
No, I said you could back it the regular way.
That was true.
I was under the impression that the investors were the people that put in $8,000 and would actually see profits from the game.
Yeah, well, the minimum is $1,000. But I was one of the early backers. I got the email. I'm backer number 787. And since I got the $5 off, I decided to add on the Wasteland playing cards.
So did you get the $1,000 out?
No. I'm not. Although, you know, now that I think about it, it might be a wise investment to invest in the game. But no.
And they also released the last first look Civ for Civ 6. They showed Russia.
Yeah.
And Peter is leading it. And it looks like he gets a bonus finally for being in the Tundra. So yeah. If you start in the Tundra as Russia, you won't be as bad as somebody else that gets started in the Tundra.
You know, they also gave Russia the same power that the Shoshone have in Civilization V, in which when you found a city, it gets bigger than normal other cities. You can also do a new district in which if you put a great person there, it adds a tile to your city. Yeah. So the entire point about... Oh, and also you get extra bonus resources in terms of science and other stuff when you're trading with another civilization, which happens to be more advanced than you. So basically the entire civilization is about expansion and not stealing tech, but partnering with people unwillingly to get their tech. Also, the Cossacks can move after they attack.
Yeah, so that'll be a very powerful Civ. I think they can do war or science. And, you know, I think they're trying to gear the game so you don't feel that domination or war is always necessary.
Definitely. I was telling you about this the other day, Scott, but I've been playing on the preview build, and I started playing around with the Scythians. Or I think that's how you say that, but they are awesome. They're very set up for a military victory, and the way that they have a very early archery, light cavalry archery unit. They don't need horses to make the unit, and they have a bonus in which they do bonus damage to any unit that is wounded already. And they get 50 HP back if they kill the unit, with any unit.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And that set me up so fast to, like, take the two closest cities. That set me up to take
the city-states?
Yeah, city-states. And then I took over a Civ real quick, and I had a sprawling empire before I knew it. But it's not just that. Like, they have this specific tile enhancement, in which they get, if they place it, they get one faith point and one gold per turn. And they can do that from the very beginning of the game.
That is good. Very powerful.
So you set up for... And religious victory is a thing in Civ 6. That's a new addition to this one.
Oh. But you see, the thing about Civ 5 is that religion became less powerful as the game went along, as you went into the future. Wouldn't the religious victory have to be in the first part of the game, or does religion remain powerful throughout the ages this time?
As you go on, it's like the other ones where you have...
How is this any different from a cultural victory?
It's specific... I haven't actually gone through
You're pushing your religion versus your nation's thing. So that's the difference. Like, a religion can exist in many nations without those nations being dominated culturally. Mm-hmm. You know, like Christianity can exist in China without America or anybody else's culture in there. It's just, you know, Christianity or whatever religion is in there.
Okay. So, go ahead.
And even if you're not chasing after the religious victory, the benefits from getting a religion super early are obvious. Like you get your first great prophet, and you get a couple great bonuses to go with that, and then you move on to apostles are a new thing in this game that you use to enhance your religion.
Well, how are they different than the what do they call again in Civ 5?
In Civ 5, I think the religion didn't really get weaker. It was Civ 4 that religion got weaker. Because in Civ 5, you could do enhancement, and then there was a third thing you could do to it, where you can get stuff like the post-industrial Holy Warriors, where you can buy tanks with religion.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you could also buy holy, what's it called, gray people with religion and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That was my favorite one, where you could buy scientists with religion, so it was still powerful to me.
And I'll tell you this, there was a specific religious trait that I was eyeing up while I was playing as the Scythians. It looks like it's going to be great. Crusade gives you bonus attack power for in a city that follows your religion.
They have that in, but they have that in Civ 5 too.
They did?
Yeah, and they also they had one in which you get a bonus if you're in a foreign city that follows your religion. They had one that had a bonus if you're defending your own cities with religion. So yeah, they did have that one in which if the other city has your religion, you get a bonus. Mm-hmm. That was one of the rewards in Civ 5. I remember that one. Because if you're a city, if you're a civilization which spreads religion quickly, well, you might as well get that one because, you know, hey, guess what? You're following my religion? I'm gonna take it over with some force. And they're going to like it, too.
Yeah.
Looking at the video, by the way, I still love that parchment on territory that you can't see. Yeah. I love that look. It's like, you know, you still know it's there, but it's not within your line of sight, so it just looks like parchment.
Yeah, it's like a treasure map. I love it.
Yeah.
It does look really nice.
So tomorrow is Comic-Con, and there's a lot of stuff coming out with Comic-Con, too. They just announced the Gears of War movie.
Nice.
Which, there's been words of a Gears of War movie for a while, but now they finally announced that it's going to be, the studio is going to be Universal. So, one of the strengths of Gears of War is that it has a solid narrative structure, so you don't have to really change too much from the games themselves. You just have to pick out which part of the game you want to do. And I'm willing to bet you that they'll be doing Gears of War backstory when Marcus was arrested near the end. What happens is that he was trying to free his father or get word that his father knew something about the basically the early days of the invasion of Sarah and Marcus's imprisonment near the end. I think that would be a good movie story, and also it won't be burdened by how much time to take it because it's all backstory.
Well, as long as they don't go the Warcraft route, because there was a lot of lore there as well, and they totally just ruined that.
You know, actually, from what I understand, a lot of World of Warcraft fans love that movie. You know, it may be one of those movies that's just for the fans that they really love, and other people always you like the Cowboy Bebop the movie. It's like, well, if you're not a fan, it's kind of terrible.
I like Warcraft a lot. I've been playing since Orcs and Humans, and I can't get into that movie.
Okay, well, you know, I mean, there's also the route of The Last Airbender, in which you put on a director who knows nothing about the about the cartoon and just screws it up completely.
Yeah. There was no way that movie was going to be good. You can't compress a year's worth of episodes into...
you don't try. You don't try to compress it. That's just it, you know. You can do a snapshot. I mean, the thing is that a movie only needs to be entertaining. It doesn't have to tell the whole story. As a matter of fact, Voltaire said, the secret to being boring is to tell everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they just did one shot, one mini-adventure... You know, just adapt one of the episodes. And there you go. You just have to let people know who these people are and what their powers are. I mean, does it really make that much of a... is it really that difficult to tell people, these people can manipulate water? That's all you need to say. They'll get it.
I mean, to a certain extent, that's what you got with the Cowboy Bebop movie. That was pretty much just an hour-long episode.
The issue wasn't his inability to say, oh, these people control this element. It was how he executed it.
Oh, I know.
Making it look just absolutely terrible.
Well, let's see. You have people who can manipulate rock in the middle of a quarry. Yeah, well, they can't escape. Why? It's like saying, oh, well, this person can breathe underwater, so let's make his prison a lake attached to the ocean. You'll never get away. That's why I think in the cartoon, I never watched the cartoon, but I know that the Earth people were imprisoned on a boat made of metal, which makes them not able to use their power. because there's no earth. And also, if you're going to have the power of the earth, you can do a lot better than throwing rocks. Now, cue Killer Croc saying, but it was a big rock. Anyway, so yeah, the world, Gears of War, and, you know, they were flashing up codes for Gears of War, and there was no, I couldn't keep up. I couldn't keep up. I'm just going to have to buy it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, by the way, pre-ordering Civilization VI gets you the Aztec Civ bonus, which would normally you'd have to pay for. We can debate the ethics of releasing that DLC like that at another time.
Well, you get it 90 days early. After okay. that, everybody gets it. It's not one of the four DLC.
Oh, okay. That's cool. I mean, I'm definitely going to buy Civ 6. That's not even a question of it. I'm probably going to pre-order it. And I'll probably do the season pass, because why not?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure there's a season pass now, because everything has a season pass.
Yeah.
So, anyways, what have you been playing, Scott?
Well, I finished the Trails in the Sky second story game. Very okay. satisfying.
Did it end with a cliffhanger?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, without giving away too much, what was the nature of the cliffhanger?
That was just in the beginning of the game, one of the characters... Because, like, you play the first game with two main characters, and
right.
at the end... of that one, that character, one of the two characters, separates from you, and you basically spend, I guess, a quarter to maybe a half of the second game trying to find that character, you know, get back and reunited with them, and eventually you get reunited with them, and then you go and finish off the boss, and the game has a really good story. I'm just trying not to get too much into the plot, you know. But it's very worth it, I think. I mean, to me, it was like a new Suikoden series. Like, that's how detailed this world is and how interesting the story and the characters and all the little NPCs running around. They actually, you know, they change as the story goes and they react to the events that are happening. It feels like a real world, so it was a lot of fun to explore it.
I like that idea. That's like a slow burn that crosses games, not just like a slow burn from the beginning of the game to somewhere near the end, but that like one that actually transcends like the boundaries of one game into another.
Yes, yeah.
You know what's funny is that replaying it, the trilogy again, it seems like Mass Effect 1 is one big slow burn. Because you think a lot happens in Mass Effect 1, but actually not much. Not much happens in it, except for the fact that you kill Saren and you discover the Reapers. It isn't until the ending of Mass Effect 2 with a suicide run that things really pick up, and then they just keep moving from there.
Yeah. I would agree. Yeah, basically, in Mass Effect 1, all you do is kill a pawn. That's your entire mission for that entire game.
And you also do a lot of wandering around. Unfortunately, you know, the Mako scenes make it seem even longer than that, but you're still... wandering around and trying to get clues.
Mm-hmm.
So, what have you been playing, TJ?
Civ 6, obviously, but also, I picked up a couple games for my 3DS recently. First off, I think it's Tokyo Rampage, something like that. The Kunio series, which is actually like a precursor to Double Dragon. It's just a fun little... I used to play Super Dodgeball on the Nintendo, and I played Double Dragon, and I love both those kinds of games, and they're both in that game, so...
What about River City Rampage, huh?
Yeah, I loved River City Rampage, too, and this is exactly what that game is. Tokyo okay. Rampage is a total River City Rampage, like,
okay.
remake.
Because I'll tell you something, that the original host of this show was a huge River City Rampage fan, Derek, wherever you are.
Yeah, it's a fantastic game. And Tokyo, it's just mindless fun with a little bit of RPG elements to make it a little more interesting. On the other end, finally picked up Azure Striker Gunvolt 2, which... if you are a Mega Man fan waiting for or tired of trying to make Mighty No. 9...
I was about to say, what's wrong with Mighty No. 9? Well, I'll say this. Actually, there's nothing wrong with Mighty No. 9. There's also nothing right about it either.
The thing that's wrong with them is that it's not Azure Striker Gunvolt.
Okay.
Azure Striker Gunvolt was made by the same people who made Mega Man ZX on the original 3DS. It's a sort of... those games were Metroidvania, but this is more level-based, so it's more like Mega Man X in that way. And the from everything from like the style, the getting powers, the doing levels, the different ways to complete levels, it's totally, absolutely the best Mega Man knockoff ever.
Is this on Steam?
This is on 3DS.
Oh, okay. And...
I could check really quick, but I haven't seen it released on Steam. But yeah, it's easily my favorite handheld platformer ever.
So, as for me, I just got the code yesterday for Boulder Dash 30th anniversary. I haven't played it yet, but it's Boulder Dash. I mean, what else can you say about it? So I'll probably be enjoying that. There's two games which have been released, which I'm actually really interested in getting. And that one of them is the Turing Test, and the other one is a different one. I forgot what it's called, but it's on a spaceship. It's like a 2.5-hour game. Again, you talk to the computer, and it talks back. And if you're nasty to it or sarcastic, it'll respond in kind. If you're nice to it, it'll respond in kind to that, too. Oh, God, I'm trying to remember the name of it. But it's been getting a lot of attention lately, and I know not that one. I forgot the name of it. Damn it. Oh well. Alpha 1 or something like that. I don't know. But it takes place around Europa. Talk to the AI through a keyboard, and you know, it's few puzzles, but I forgot the name of it. This is riveting. It's not Turing Test though, because it also takes place around Europa. And like I said, both these games really are actually are perking my ears up. Because the AI in both of them, I don't know how much of it is a vertical slice, but you could talk to either of them and use any kind of diction you want, and they will respond to you, realistically.
Hmm.
And what it makes me think is, you know what this could really do? You could really have a kick-ass text adventure now. Or something like that, because when the AI starts to be able to talk back to you in a realistic way, it makes it a lot easier to evolving games, you know, or maybe have a GM. There was a game called Fantasy Empires, which was basically the thing that it boasted of was it had a virtual DM, and I'm thinking, you know, it'd be great to have a DM that actually you can chat with and chat realistically with, not like Ractor. Or anything like that. Anyway, we're going to move on to the game news for this week. Take it away, Scott.
Okay. Beyond Good and Evil 2 is happening. Original game free on PC next week. This is from PC Gamer. If the concept artwork teased by series developer Michael Ancel last week didn't sway you, it now seems work on Beyond Good and Evil a long-awaited sequel is all but underway. Taking once again to Instagram yesterday, the man responsible for Rayman posted another image of the anthropomorphic rhino with the caption, "Endangered species, now saved. Game in pre-production. Stay tuned." According to Ubisoft, Michael is currently sharing his time between Ubisoft and Wild Sheep Studios. The artwork he posted is from the game.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The artwork he posted is from the game he's currently working on at Ubisoft. We don't have anything further to share at this stage. The original Beyond Good and Evil is set to follow the likes of Splinter Cell, Rayman Origins, and The Crew as Ubisoft's next Ubi 30 entrant, which means players can grab the 2003 action adventure game free of charge as of next week. And I already own it on GOG, so.
Yeah, I already own it on Steam, so.
Okay.
I've never played it.
Really? Wow. It's one of the better take-a-photo-of-stuff games. Now, one thing you have to understand about Beyond Good and Evil is it's actually about 9/11 and what happened afterwards. So a lot of it is about morality. And it's very subtle, too. It's not hit you in the face with it. It's more subtle. But you still get the impression of, this is what happens when you overreact to stuff. So, and I'll say the on Steam or wherever you got it on PC, it still holds up. It's a bit cartoony, but then again, it was always cartoony. And at least in the PC version, you have really good resolution. So, yeah, tell us about tell us what you think of this, because we know, Scott, that we've been waiting forever for this. Remember, we had that one trailer like in 2006, in which you have the protagonist and her pig friend just sitting around a desert, and the pig is sleeping and is bothered by a fly on his nose, and that's all you saw.
Well, it looks interesting. I am interested in seeing this game. I'd probably replay the first one just to, get reacquainted with it. But, looking forward to it.
This isn't the first time we've had this, though. It's been rumored for the past 10 years, it's sort of like, oh, here's a little bit more information about the game that may or may not be coming out, But the fact, it's very telling that he said pre-production, which means they were never working on it in the first place.
They wanted to, but I guess they didn't have the money or the backing or whatever they needed to start production.
Or maybe they didn't think anybody would be interested.
Anyway.
That's odd to think about, because I hear people talk about this game all the time, and it's one of those games I kind of wish I'd played, but just don't have the time to go back to. It's something that people have been talking about forever, right?
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's a pretty laid-back action-adventure game, too. It's not like you don't have to have skills. It's more like things will go at the pace that you want it to. If you want to do this adventure right now and quickly, then it'll go quickly and it'll be that. But if you want to just savor everything and just take in the sights, the sounds, and this and everything else, then it'll allow you to do that too. And one of the great things is that you have a heroine in the first place. The main character is female, and also she's not an idiot. She's actually pretty smart, but she has to deal with people on a simpler level because they're on a simpler level than her. If you can get it, and try it out. I mean, even if you just play for a couple of hours, you'll really enjoy yourself. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
The Witcher 3 success, quote, harmed my books, claims author. From the Wolf Hall. Okay, hold on, there's...
Okay. What?
The Witcher 3 has enjoyed fine success in the games industry, bagging several accolades to its name, including Game of the Year awards. However, The Witcher book author...
Andrzej Sapkowski.
Thank you. Isn't much thrilled with the game's current fame and success. In a recent interview with... Politica, the author made surprising claims regarding the game. Sapkowski stated, "Seeing a picture from the game on the cover of my book, many fans assumed that the game was first, and respectable fans of sci-fi and fantasy hold such derivative books in contempt. I have to keep explaining to the fans that I wrote the book 12 years before the game was made, and that the sandworm is from the game, not the books. You couldn't find a sandworm in the books, even if you tried." In addition to it, Sapkowski referred to the modern U.S. cover of The Time of Contempt, which features CD Projekt Red's vision of Geralt fighting with a creature similar to a sandworm from Dune. The events are extraneous to how they appear in the author's mind. Instead of being faithful to the source material, he goes on to claim that the game, that the great game writers write game-related stuff exclusively for money. And surely they write in a sloppy manner, half-heartedly. Oh. even though Sapkowski had quite a lot to voice out about the game art, not all of it was against the game specifically. Quote, "The issues that I have, thanks to the games, are not at all caused by the game itself," he clarified. "I am not envious of the game's undeniable success. I am far from it. But there is but one original Witcher, that which belongs to me, and nothing will take it away from me."
Yeah, so, well, you know, there's a term we like to call this. It's called adaptation displacement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in which you see something like Die Hard, and people say, "Wait, it's a sequel, and it's based on a book?" You know, because Die Hard is actually the sequel to The Detective, and it's based on a book, not called Die Hard, but something else, which was a sequel to The Detective. But people see it and they say, "Oh, well, wait, I thought that," you know. I mean, people often say about, "Oh, what's something that's popular that they," anyways, so.
Dexter is a book, for instance.
Okay, I don't watch that show.
Okay.
I don't like that show, is the reason why. A Little Shop of Horrors, the 1960, for one thing, they don't know that there was a 1960 film, and then they don't know that it was based on a book called A Touch of Green. So, yeah, I mean, you know, secondly, oh boy, you know, him complaining about this would be like Simon and Joe Schuster complaining that John Byrne and other people wrote Superman differently than he wrote Superman, and that Schuster was the one who created Superman, so only his Superman is the real one, you know?
It kind of also reminds me of Elric writer, the, you know, the Elric that I'm talking about, where he has that black sword and white hair, and they felt that Witcher ripped that character off, and it just seemed really strange.
Oh no, it's totally different because Geralt has white hair.
Yeah. Well, Geralt also doesn't have a soul-sucking sword, so
yeah.
That's a big difference.
Well, I haven't played The Witcher or any of the Witcher games. I intend to at some point, but someone told me not to play the original Witcher because it's basically a single-player MMO and utterly boring, and that I should just skip to Witcher 3, which is a much more realized world, and the side quests don't... It's like Mass Effect. The side quests don't feel like side quests. It just feels like other parts of the story which you're just getting more information about.
Well, I mean, I'll talk to you about that when you play it, but Witcher 2 is good. Witcher 2 is sort of like that. They were getting closer, but Witcher 3 is perfect. And you don't need the other ones to play Witcher 3. It's sort of a self-enclosed tale that just like it explains what it needs to explain. It does what it needs to do. And
do you still get cheesecake pictures of the women you boff?
No, just in the first one.
I know, I was about to say, that was in the first one. I remember Yahtzee complaining about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first one seemed a little, sounded like it was kind of sort of juvenile.
Yeah. The third one, it's just the best. It's one of the only fantasy fiction RPGs that I would ever, like modern fantasy fiction RPGs that I would ever put up against Skyrim. And we're talking like action RPG, not like Pillars of Eternity.
You see, this is the same thing that you have with HBO's Game of Thrones and also HBO's New Blood? Was it? No, True Blood. Is that they could only go with the novels so far before they had to make their own changes.
Right.
And also The Walking Dead, too.
And I like that. I like when people make changes that make sense. Like, I'm going to bring up The Watchmen. Don't get mad at me.
Okay.
But I've read the comic, and I've seen the movie, and I thoroughly enjoy what they did in the movie with Dr. Manhattan destroying the city. Them using Dr. Manhattan's powers to destroy the cities rather than some dumbass fucking random alien just transporting to cities and exploding. That always
bothers me. Do you have something against Cthulhu?
Like, I do. I have something against Ozymandias controlling the Cthulhu.
I mean, the problems with the film version of Watchmen have nothing to do with the fact they don't have a slimy squid.
Right. I'm just saying that sometimes the changes they make sense and are better.
Yeah. And then some of the changes that people make no absolute sense. We're going to talk about another Moore adaptation, and that's of The Killing Joke. Yeah. In which they could have gone bad in two ways, and they decided to go bad in both ways. I think we discussed this already.
Everyone's expectations.
Yeah, I think we already discussed this. You know, what the most off-putting part of The Killing Joke, the animated film, though, is that it, not only was it junk, but it had junk with Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill doing the voices.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
That was like, yeah, I know what Mark Hamill's The Joker is like, and that's not Mark Hamill's The Joker. They should have done it someone else. Like when they did Beneath the Red Mask, they used John DiMaggio to do the Joker, and it fit. Because that Joker was more brutish, thuggish, still was the Joker, and John DiMaggio could still do a creepy laugh, but it wasn't Mark Hamill's The Joker, because I could not imagine Mark Hamill's Joker being in Beneath the Red Mask.
Yeah.
I couldn't. The Red Hood.
The best part about Under the Red Hood was that John DiMaggio's the Joker. It was like the Joker in his later years, and John DiMaggio did a great job at like putting some mileage on that character.
Also had the best Joker moment I've ever seen, in which Black Mask, you know, the entire water thing, you know, just taking out all of his guards at once with just by eating chips and having a drink of water.
Yeah.
Also, it also showed that the Joker was a death seeker when he starts screaming, and not only is he laughing, but he's crying, that his ideal way to go is him and Batman dying together.
Yeah.
So, if you want to see a nice R-rated Batman, was it R-rated? I think it was.
It was.
Okay. If you want to see a good R-rated Batman story, that's the one to watch. And also, it's heartbreaking because it ends with Jason Todd saying it's the greatest day of his life. So, anyways. Yeah, go ahead.
I would say that Under the Red Hood is easily in my top three of the DC Animated Universe, if not the top one.
Well, you know, I saw Batman Mask of the Phantasm in theaters. I was one of the three. So, Scott, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Got a tangent onto comic books that I haven't really read.
So anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. October has arrived and the Nintendo NX has not, and this comes to us from Forbes magazine. September came and went not only without a reveal of the Nintendo NX, but also without even a hint when the reveal of the Nintendo NX will be. The only piece of information confirmed all year about the NX so far is that it has a March 2017 release, but each day that goes by, that seems less and less likely. Gamers are now under 6 months from an alleged NX launch with literally no information about the system from Nintendo. And that's even assuming that a late March 31st release. March is not some arbitrary deadline for Nintendo, it's the end of their fiscal year, which is why I think that March 2017... release date is bullshit, because anytime you have, like, when you see a date on, say, Amazon, which says December 31st, 2016, you know it's not a real release date. It's a placeholder date that's saying, we haven't figured out one yet, but here's one just to put into the computer. A holiday launch would have been more standard and more profitable, no doubt, but if they couldn't even make that window, March is going to be their last best bet. It's been nearly 600 days since the NX was first announced on a financial call as a way to reassure investors that Nintendo is not getting out of the hardware game. After that, Nintendo said they wouldn't be ready to talk about the system until 2016. It is now October, and the only information about the system that's been promised is the 2017 release date. It's not even known if the NX is its real name. All that's available is an enormous number of leaks with many implications about the system. It won't be that powerful. It'll be portable. It'll be based around another touchscreen. It'll have a docking station for home play. It'll have detachable controllers for mobile play. Many of these things may be true, but none of them have come from Nintendo itself, and there have been no solid evidence hardware leaks to confirm anything, though hilariously, fans have started 3D printing their own NX controllers to fool the press and fans. That is trolling of the highest degree. I salute them. Forbes predicts the following scenarios. Either there's a short delay, in which Nintendo bumps a release from March to May or June, out of summer releases and a holiday release, but they could essentially debut it at E3 and do a Microsoft saying, oh, by the way, it's available right now. And it would be a window where kids are home from school, and summer is usually a downtime for new releases. An NX launch with Zelda, Mario, and or Pokemon in that period would be fantastic and face minimal competition. Or you could have a long delay, in which Nintendo has realized it's not ready to break tradition, and they eat another dead year with the Wii U in order to release the NX in next holiday. However, it's a long time to let the Wii U just sit there with the biggest release being Zelda, something that most people want to play on the NX. And next fall, the NX would be going up against the Xbox One's Scorpio, and who knows what else. So yeah, this is something I should have realized, and that is... Nintendo is not saying anything about the NX, and that's disturbing. Because you'd think, if they were going to release it, even in March 2017, they would have said something. They would have released pictures. They would have done something to start generating interest. You know, it's not going to generate interest because it's there. You know, I've seen consoles pop in and no one said anything about them. It's like, oh, it was released? Okay.
Yeah, I don't think Nintendo knows how to tease the public and create anticipation. This just seems to... I think they're taking it for granted.
I'm going to cue the Wii Music demo at E3 a couple of years ago now. I mean, TJ, go ahead.
It's like they're spinning their wheels. I don't know. I can't even figure out what Nintendo is thinking anymore. Like... there's a part where I think they're out of touch, there's a part where I think they're in touch, and then there's a part where I just think they have no idea. And the more time goes on, I really think it's that third option.
Yeah, I'm wondering if this is sort of like Forbes said, that they announced the NX during an investor call to lay fears that they weren't getting out of the hardware business, and they had something coming. And I'm wondering if they even know what that something is.
Like, what if that conference had just been like a napkin on a like an NX with the rest of a word covered by a notebook or something? And they're like, yeah, but the NX.
Oh yeah, well it was like they looked at the file and it says N to X and oh it's the NX. By the way, just so you know, that's how Frank L. Baum figured out the name for Oz because he had two filing cabinets. One said A to N, the other one said O to Z. He said, I'm going to call it Oz.
It works.
Yeah. And here's the thing. You know, it doesn't mean it's going to be bad, because I'm going to tell you something. The Commodore 64 is famously just... the original C64s were just cobbled together from whatever computer parts that Jack Tramiel could find. One out of every three Commodore 64s were defective. I should know. I had one of them, and I had to return it and get it back. You know? I mean...
aware of that. I remember you used to have Commodore 64 and it seemed to work fine. There was even an article I read where a machine shop in Poland has been using a Commodore 64 for the past, like, I guess 30 years, and it's been working fine doing
They're probably not launch 64s, though. I'm talking about the launch 64, which I had one.
Okay.
You know, just like the Xbox 360 there was a high defective rate because Microsoft's contract, I think, was with NVIDIA, and they had to create a new console because they were legally not allowed to build any more Xboxes after a certain point.
Mm.
So they had to build one quickly out of baling wire and duct tape. I don't know how that excuses the original iPod, though. I mean, that was really bad. One out of every two launch iPods was defective. One out of two. Think about that. And I had one of them. First, I didn't buy it. My mother did as a present. Of course, we got a replacement really quick. But still, you know, here's the thing. The longer you wait, the longer less people care, you know. They have to give the people something.
As long as Nintendo keeps saying that new games coming out will be on the NX, people will probably care as long as those games are interesting.
Well,
like Zelda Breath of the Wild is a perfect example. people probably couldn't give a crap about the NX before they announced that, but then they did announce it, and that's a big deal.
But it's not an NX exclusive. It's going to be for the Wii U, too, just like Twilight Princess was for the Wii and the Wii U. The problem is that if you were... what if you say, okay, we're making Breath of the Wild, it's going to be for the Wii U and the NX. You're going to have people who are not going to buy the Wii U version because they're expecting the NX version.
Yeah.
See, I'm not sure if I even want the NX version because I don't know what the NX even looks like. I mean, if it's some tiny little mobile phone looking thing, I don't think I'm going to want it.
But that's the problem, Scott. Now you have other people who are going to say, well, I'm going to buy the Breath of the Wild now for the Wii U because I want to play it now. You're not going to buy it for the NX later, are you? Really?
No.
See, that there is a conundrum, you know?
And that's the part where I think Nintendo just has no idea. Like, that's... Like, when you put all that together and think about, like, how much risk this is, how many things could fall through, and how much they're hedging their bets. Like, I can't even tell if they're hedging their bets, because what the hell are we even looking at? I don't know.
I think they're playing by the old rules of not realizing the internet exists, and that people... word of mouth spreads over the internet, and you could just give them a little bit, you know, and we have nothing. And I like that line in the article that said, you know, people have been printing fake NX controllers, and I've seen posts like that, and it's just, you know, it's not filling me with confidence for this NX at all.
You know, the thing is that, here's the thing, Nintendo seems to think, well, we'll just slap a Nintendo on it and people will buy it. That's not how it works.
Not anymore, anyways.
Yeah, not anymore.
And you have too much competition. I mean, Sony learned that the hard way with the PlayStation 3. You just can't slap PlayStation and call it a... I mean, you can't slap Sony on it and call it a PlayStation and expect people to buy whatever you send out there, you know? You gotta... And Microsoft did the same thing, you know? They had the lead with the Xbox 360 and they pissed it all away by deciding... to move forward into the future that people were not ready for. You know, they...
Yeah.
And, you know, they assumed everybody's going to have internet, which is simply not true. That's number one, you know? And here, you know, the thing is that you have to coax people into not owning a physical media. You know, I don't know... if you're a PC owner, how often do you actually buy physical media anymore?
Not often at all.
No.
I'm pretty much a digital person now.
But, even on consoles, I buy digital more than I buy physical anymore.
Yeah.
But 10 years ago, people would have looked at you like you were crazy. You know, how could you not own the physical copy? Because, you know, what happens if this company goes out? You're going to be screwed. Well, for one thing, we know that no matter what, hackers will help us out with that.
Like, for instance, with GOG, you can download the install file, and you don't need the Galaxy, and you don't need... any of the other stuff, you get the install file and that's your game forever now.
Yeah, just burn it onto a disk.
Or a CD or whatever for backup.
At some point, we're going to have a console which does not have a hard drive at all. Maybe 10 years from now, they're not going to have a hard drive at all. I mean, people own computers without having a floppy disk drive in it. Maybe having a disk drive just to play movies and CDs. That's it.
Yeah, well, the disk drive, the floppy drive, has been long since gone. You have to get a USB A drive now if you want to look at old disk drives, or, you know, floppy disk. I barely even use my CD-ROM drive. It's practically useless.
You know, Nintendo could be way ahead of the curve if they had a console without a floppy drive and it was entirely... based on internet. I mean, they talked about the NX, one of the unsubstantiated rumors, in which it's going to use SD cards as its storage and stuff, which is fine. I mean, you know, that's a good option. I mean, even the Xbox 360 allowed you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, no, the thumb drives. They allow you to use thumb drives.
The 3DS has been using heck, since even the DS, they've been using SD cards, and it's always been a real convenient option to just, like, slip, if I have a lot of games, just take out the one that I need, and it's just as compatible as, like, having a game card.
And like I said, you know, but the problem is that Nintendo, A, has to really let people know what form factor it's going to be, you know? Is it going to be a console so I can get rid of the Wii U? Is it going to be a handheld so I can get rid of the 3DS? I mean, you can't say it's a combo unless you say exactly what it's a combo of. You know, yeah. What's the power of this thing? Is it going to be comparable to a console? Because if you're saying that you can hook it up to your set top, well, a lot of things could do that before. You know, that's nothing new. You know, but
it sounds like they are trying to make a third option, like a mobile that isn't a 3DS or I don't know. It's just I agree with.
Here's the thing. If Nintendo,
DJ, they need to show us more because it just feels very too vague and too uncertain to really say, oh yeah, we'll get this.
If Nintendo wanted to say we're making our own branded cell phone, people will buy it. Okay, and they say, oh, the cell phone also allows you to, you know, have it go on a television screen so that you can, you know, you can actually have a huge screen while you're playing it, and it has graphics good enough that it doesn't look like pixelated crap, then that's fine. By the way, there's been, related to this, and we're getting slightly off topic, new mini NES news. The pre-orders are now going out, and I know you were really excited about it, Scott.
You said mini NES? Oh, yes.
The handheld, not handheld, but the tiny little mini NES. Yeah, the pre-orders have started going out.
Excellent.
So that's today's news, by the way, just so you people know. In England, it's going to be released in November. That's all I know. I don't know about the U.S. date yet. But CNET has a long article about it if you want to read it. What's funny is that the Nintendo controllers are going to be almost as big as the mini NES itself.
The crazy thing is
controllers are tiny.
No, the controllers that can the old controllers can plug into it.
Oh, that is good then.
Yeah, I'll send you the link right now so that you can see the normal NES controllers, which now look gigantic next to the mini NES. It's hilarious.
You know what's crazy is that I would almost rather have the NES Mini than an X right now. I'm more invested in the Nintendo Mini than I am in an NES.
I wonder if I'd break out my NES now, because I have a regular NES. I mean, it's sitting on above the TV, sort of like it's not even a console. It's more like a decoration alongside Robbie the Robot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Robbie the Robot.
Yeah, I have a launch NES, which came with Light Gun and Robbie the Robot, Gyromite, and Duck Hunt. No Super Mario Brothers. I got ripped off. I like Duck Hunt, but Gyromite was a big turd.
You gotta get that Duck Hunt Mario package all in the same game.
Yeah, no, I just got the Gyromite Duck Hunt package. Like I said, you know. Oh, I think I had Donkey Kong with it too. I'm not sure. I don't think it was included. I also had a ColecoVision, and that was the first time, you know, ColecoVision had the best Donkey Kong for a long while.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so yeah, NX, Nintendo, say something.
Yeah, quit pulling a Hello Games. Break the silence.
Well, Hello Games openly lied. Nintendo's doing the opposite. They're saying nothing. Anyways.
Well, I'm talking about Hello Games now. They're just completely radio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
At some point, you got to do damage control.
And who's going to buy your next game if you don't talk? You know. Well, actually, it'll be interesting. See, the thing about games is that gamers, at least if it's fun, they'll play it. I mean, people were pissed about DMC. Right, the Devil May Cry reboot, but you know, it's a cult hit, and you know they acknowledge that its gameplay is a lot better than the other DMC games. By the way, we're going to get off topic because this reminds me of something else. I saw a Jim Sterling video the other day, and unlike most of his videos, you know, I was unambiguously agreeing with him on this one, and he talks about voice actors. And how a lot of companies don't realize that when you keep changing voice actors or dumping on them, people you don't really get a hold on the character. And he was talking about how David Hayter was replaced by Kiefer Sutherland, right? And he pointed out some people, and one of the things they said, how many people really care about Dante because he keeps on changing voice actors? Or the main characters of Resident Evil, they have different voice actors each and every time. But the one person you do remember is Wesker because he had a consistent voice actor for the past few games, right? I'll give you another example. Gears of War. What if they removed John DiMaggio and used someone else? Would you be able to identify with Marcus anymore? No.
It would be very unsettling to see that familiar face and hear a different voice coming out of that face, and you just be—it would be hard to like that character.
No one liked the most recent Splinter Cell because it wasn't Michael Ironside doing Sam Fisher.
I was about to say, didn't people lose their minds over that? Because Michael Ironside was too old to do the
Yeah, I mean, they had to reboot it, but they still couldn't connect with Sam Fisher because of that. You know, and what they're doing with Gears of War 4 is they're basically passing the torch. John DiMaggio is still playing Marcus Fenix, but now it's 25 years later, so Marcus Fenix is old. Although, if I can judge from some of the trailers, he's not exactly going to be inactive. He's not, you know... But they introduce these new characters, and people are more willing to accept them because they're not Marcus Fenix, yeah. You know? And it's not... Oh, jeez, I forgot his girlfriend slash wife's name again.
Marcus Fenix?
Yeah. Because he got married to the female cog that you see in the game, and
Anya
they had a
Stroud?
Kid. What?
Anya Stroud?
Yeah, Anya. He married Anya. Which is odd because I thought Anya was supposed to be infertile, but what the heck? They found a way. They found a way to make Anya fertile again. Or maybe they did. Maybe they just did artificial insemination or, you know, did whatever. Anyways, he married Anya and they had a kid. And the kid is who you're playing in the game. Adam Fenix.
Hmm.
Named after his father, I believe. So, and, you know, I'm sort of on a mixed thing about Gears of War 4, by the way. I'm interested, but I'm not interested enough that I want to play it day one.
It's odd to me, because I remember playing... I mean, me and my buddies played through that entire series, and Gears of War 3 just felt so complete. And then...
Then Judgment came out.
and Judgment was a prequel, so it didn't mess with that, but I also didn't care. But...
At least the new creatures, they're not the Locust, they're not the Flood, that's Halo. The Swarm. The Swarm is the new enemy in Gears of War 4, and they look pretty cool. They look very organic, even more organic than the... and by organic, I mean icky, than the Locusts or the Lambent.
The planet of Sarah is a crappy place to live.
It may be the only place for people to live, unfortunately. I mean, they had more people die than they did in the Halo universe. At least in the Halo universe, I think, what was it, 300 million people survived, or maybe 500 million, which is a tiny bit compared to 14 billion, if I remember. I mean, what is it in the Gears of War universe? It was something like 50,000 people survived?
Yeah.
Something like that. And they're apparently locking away anybody who's healthy because they're trying to make sure that nothing screws up the population. So they're locking up normal people and making sure that they're safe.
Wow.
I mean, what was the story with the people in the first three games? I forgot what they were called. You know, the people who hated GOG. COG. They had a name. You know, those people who weren't exactly your friends in the game, you know, and they weren't part of COG.
Yeah, I remember. Like,
I forgot the names of them, but this is worse than what they were going through. Now it's sort of like, oh yeah, eat and breed. That's what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Fallout 4 Skyrim mods are back for the PlayStation 4 with one big caveat, and this comes from Game Informer. Bethesda's plan to bring out Fallout 4 mods to the PS4 ran into a series of setbacks since the game's release, leading to delays and the eventual cancellation of the feature last month. Today, Bethesda announced that the mods are coming to the PS4 after all, but there are some major caveats with when and how they'll function. Last month, when Bethesda announced that it was canceling its mod plans, the publisher said it was still working with Sony to find a solution to the problem. It appears the two companies have found that solution, but it can't... I just said that. In a post on Bethesda's blog, the publisher revealed that the user mods featured in the PS4 version of Fallout 4 and Skyrim will not be allowed to contain any external assets, and instead must rely on assets contained in the original game. That means you can kiss things like Stormtrooper armor, new hairstyles, and light laser sabers goodbye, as well as... the Randy Savage Deathclaw mod.
You almost got your Roddy Pipers and your Randy Savages mixed up.
I know. In addition to anything else, features user-created models, textures, or sound files. Additionally, Bethesda says Fallout 4 mods won't be available until after work on Skyrim Special Edition is complete, so PS4 owners still have a significant wait ahead of them. In brighter news, Bethesda says that both Skyrim and Fallout 4 will support PlayStation 4 Pro's 4K abilities. So, yeah, what is the point, then? I mean, okay, we're gonna defer to Scott on this. Scott, how many of the best Fallout 4 mods contain only assets from the game itself?
Oh my god, that is so obnoxious.
I guess because
that is just so obnoxious that you can't import custom content. That's the whole point of modding, is to have fun. To screw around and have a lightsaber duel with Darth Vader. I saw the video where somebody had like a lightsaber and they had the outfit and they started just running around killing people with that. That's awesome.
You know,
that's fun.
I think
I might not do the rowdy Macho Man Deathclaw, but other people will, and they'll enjoy it. Going, oh, yeah, you're
that'd be hilarious. Where's the Hulkster?
Why would you do that?
Where's the Hulkster? You know, I think the only thing that you'd really use it for then are the mods that affect the game itself. Like, we're going to make it so that it's easier to kill people or whatever. You know, just basically moving the sliders mods.
I don't know whose decision this is, if it's Sony, Bethesda, or what. But
I'm going to tell you right now, it's probably Sony.
Ridiculous.
And I'll tell you why, because Sony is hyper-conscious of getting lawsuit over other people, you know, copyright infringements, which I think is silly, but, you know.
Yeah. God, I mean...
Well, I mean...
It's also, I guess, easier to moderate if you don't have to worry that you're getting outside, so you won't have penis monsters running all over the place.
Yeah.
You've had Pete Hines saying over and over again, this is Sony's fault, they're the ones that are blocking this, so I don't think the situation has probably changed.
And also, doesn't Bethesda get a little tiny little cut every time someone's user mod is used in a game or something like that? I'm pretty sure they benefit. They get a profit when people download mods. I'm not sure, though. I mean, I know that Steam does.
Valve does. I'm sure they do if people are downloading them off the... Because Bethesda.net has a collection of mods.
Yeah.
I'm sure they get a cut if people are going in there and downloading, but... I don't know if they get that same cut if people are downloading off Steam or Nexus.
Maybe it's just they are just benefiting from people playing their game. Because, like I said, mods extend gameplay. I mean, you get bored with the game, you just include a bunch of Randy the Macho Man Savage, Deathclaws in there, and you can have an old new game, or have plop Darth Vader into your game and start having fun that way. I mean, that extends the lifetime of a game. I mean, look at Grand Theft Auto V.
I guess you could probably still get gameplay out if they're making adventures, but just using the same data files that are in there, just remixing it into a new dungeon or whatever, writing new dialogue,
or having the machine gun nuke thing, you know, that gun which shoots out machine gun mini nukes.
It's insane.
You can't shoot dogs any. You can't shoot dogs out of your gun anymore. That's the big thing.
Yeah, I mean, well, technically, probably you could, because that's assets that are in the game, right?
I don't know. Well, are there dogs in Fallout 4?
Yeah, there's dogs.
I mean, not your dog. I mean, stuff like Chihuahuas and Bichon Frises. They're not in the game.
No.
You can't shoot Chihuahuas out of your gun.
But the mini new baby launcher will be in there.
That's true, yeah.
But I look at Fallout, like, I do mod work for one of the websites I work for, and I basically track down some really good mods, and I load them, and I point people in that direction. And I saw a really good one on Fallout 4 recently. It was like somebody set up an entire scenario with a whole quest, a voiced quest, where you go to an abandoned, haunted amusement park where skeletons roam and the robots are trying to kill you with hot dogs. And I thought that was genius. And it sucks that people on PS4 won't be able to get cool stuff like that.
And also Skyrim. Remember, the same thing applies to Skyrim. And Skyrim has... it is the mod king of the universe right now. I mean, there's a couple quadrillion mods for that now.
Yeah.
And you can't do the... You can't do those... And see, for Skyrim, you can't do the mods that I've seen that are like... add entire continents, you know, like the Arabian-themed one that I wrote about on Game Watcher a long time ago, which, you know, you get all new clothing, all new hats, all new stuff, and the, what's it called? I mean, you can't do that. I remember one person had this project in which they redid the entire world of Tamriel, you know, as seen from Daggerfall, because the assets were in the game. They're hidden in the game. The entire continent of Tamriel is there, just, you know, no mountains or anything. It's just this flat. So he went out to populate it all.
That's, you know, crazy. That's cool.
Yeah. Also, someone redid Oblivion in Skyrim, so that you had Oblivion with Skyrim level graphics.
Yeah. I forgot what that one was
and
called.
And Morrowind, too.
Yeah, there's a, I guess, Morrowind.
You know, now that I think about it...
If anything was ever going to drive the nail into the coffin that I'm not going to buy Special Edition Skyrim 4 on PS4, it's probably this.
Yeah, I just realized, my favorite of all the Elder Scrolls is still Morrowind. I still prefer Morrowind to Oblivion and Skyrim. I don't know, maybe it's because it just felt tighter, you know? Anyways, we do have listener feedback this week. Go ahead, TJ.
From Desert Ranger. I can't wait for Wasteland 3. Huge fan of the original, and 2. Can't wait to see how vehicles come into play. Yeah, I'm really interested to see how that goes, too, because, like, especially the way you guys are describing it, it's an isometric thing, but I've also seen stuff today that looks like they are going to do, like, 3D models, and it's going to be, like, a fully populated 3D thing.
Well, it's 3D, but still isometric. A lot of the isometric games have 3D models. Like I said.
I wonder if you'll be able to zoom really far in, though, you know, so you can get on feet level. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway.
Vehicles and multiplayer are a very odd thing to me in a game that is traditionally turn-based.
Well, no, the thing is that the entire point, though, is that you and your friend are going to explore. They don't have to be together. They can go off in different directions. The letter has one more sentence in it.
Oh, also, I'm really excited for Torment, Tides of Numenera, too.
Okay. And I know that Scott is hyper excited about it. As a matter of fact, there was news about Torment today, if I remember seeing the Kickstarter update for that, too. Or was it, no, I think it was just about Wasteland? No, let me check. I know there was an update today about Numenera. I'm not sure it was just about the crowdfunding for Wasteland 3 starting. So I'll just have to check the updates. But yeah, Scott, let me ask you a question. Which are you more excited for, Wasteland 3 or Torment?
I think maybe Wasteland 3, because I like that cold realm that looks cool, and you have a base that I think you can modify and upgrade or something.
Have your own ranger base. And, oh, by the way, they're really going to be stressing the cold. They're really stressing the snow in this, because it's not taking place in the desert anymore. It's taking place in Denver.
So now you have to stay warm.
Yeah. By the way, the update that they have is that the game is in the home stretch, and it means that it's just a few months away for Tides of Numenera, so it's just about ready.
Excellent.
They also have conversation updates, too. They're improving the conversations. Well, they better, because Planescape Torment was all about talking and talking and talking and talking and talking and talking. If I remember, it had 500,000 words or something ridiculous like that, the length of several novels worth of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I think Trials in the Sky has a lot of words, too. Very lengthy dialogue for all the various NPCs and characters. So I enjoy those kind of games that have a lot of dialogue and development.
I wonder if, maybe you know this, if they're going to have the same death mechanic that they had in Planescape Torment.
I played the preview, little beta, I guess, and it seemed like they did. You would create your character.
You die, and then... And no, I mean to die. I mean, he dies and he resurrects, because that was the entire point of Planescape Torment. Are they going to have the same alignment thing? Because in Planescape Torment, you started off as true neutral, and through your actions, you built your alignment.
I think that is what they're doing. That seems to be the kind of indication that it all based on your choices. You build your character, you say, like, oh, want to hit something, or you want to... You pick a tactic of what you want to do, and that shapes your character as you go along.
Yeah, I have to play Planescape Torment again at some point. It's a long-ass game, but... Anyway. But yeah, so aside from Wasteland 3, Torment is just a few months away from being released. I didn't go all the way that I did with Pillars of Eternity. I just did the basic digital... what's it called? One digital game. That's it. Nothing else special.
I'm really anxious for Civ 6, though. That's
well, that's coming out sooner. It's coming out on the 11th?
Yeah, no, 21st.
21st, 21st. So, yeah, I have plenty of time to pre-order.
Yeah.
So, anyways, so feel free to write in. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, and leave us some iTunes comments. I am Jonah Falcon at Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denser at Johnny Chugs.
And I am Scott Dirk at Alpha Shark.
Yeah, so we will see you next week, and hopefully I'll have some interesting news from Comic-Con. Oh, by the way, you know, Comic-Con keeps in New York keeps on getting bigger and bigger. At some point, it's actually going to match that in San Diego. And I really want to go to the San Diego Comic-Con at some point. Have you, either of you, gone to any Comic-Cons or at all? Or?
No, we have not.
Okay. I haven't.
Yeah. They don't have a Midwest Comic-Con? Oh, they call it Gen Con. Oh, that's something completely different. You know what's also going on right now is the board game convention in Essen, which I really want to go to, but I can't afford a ticket to Germany at this point. Anyways, we will see you next week.
All right.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care.